inbound Redick, falling away. Jumper is good for three. Holy mackerel.
Man.
That's as deep in the corner as you can get on the move. Baseline in for James, knocked away by Simmons. The steal off the inbound. Ben Simmons, Korver trailing behind him, flips it. No look to Ilyasova for the lay-in.
Wow.
Embiid has it outside the post left against Dan, swiping away at him. Shoots over a double team and hits Joel Embiid. Showing all the moves tonight here in Cleveland. Here's Redick pulling up from 20. He buries it with 55 seconds to go. The Sixers executing down the stretch.
Well, that huge right there. That should do it.
The Sixers showing no designs on running out the clock as Saric goes in for a jam. And now we're going to have some words. Jordan Clarkson, Joel Embiid. I think they just tossed Clarkson. Oh, LeBron James isn't happy as well.
They're mad about them scoring. You know what? Stop them then.
Jordan Clarkson, after that Saric layup, grabbed the ball and tossed it off of Saric's bat. And that was the ejection of Jordan Clarkson.
I spoke to several players in the locker room who told me that they loved seeing Clarkson do that. We are still in first impression mode right now with the Cavs. And while earlier in the week, yeah, it feels better to get a win and see Jordan Clarkson make a go-ahead three late in the game to beat the Nets. Yeah, they go away with a loss tonight against the Sixers. Doesn't feel is good, but he still did something to impress his teammates, and that was to show some pride, show some toughness, and show some wherewithal to care about protecting your home court and not, you know, breaking unspoken rules of the games. Not the result the Cavs wanted, of course not, but Jordan Clarkson got that technical. He got kicked out. He also earned some respect from his teammates.
For him to take this podium and proclaim his innocence with this kind of emphasis, that means he did it knowing these three things. First, I'm guilty. No problem, I'm going to look in the eye and tell you, I am innocent. Second, I'm guilty, and there's a good chance they've got me on tape. And by they, I mean the FBI. No problem, look you in the eye, I am innocent. Third, he has to sit on that podium and know this, I'm guilty, they've got me on tape, there's criminal charges swirling, and I am within 30 minutes of being fired. I'm going to put my chips on the table and see if I can out-checkmate them on this one. You want to fire me? Do it with me proclaiming right into your eye, I am innocent. He is innocent, or he is Rafael Palmeiro times 10.
I heard what Sean Miller said. The only thing I can say is I stand by what I reported on Friday night. And based on my reporting this week, I have no reason to believe that anything in that article is inaccurate. As he said in his press conference earlier today, it's an ongoing in the FBI investigation. Telephone conversations that were recorded by FBI wiretaps and the documents and financial records that were seized by the FBI during its two-year investigation remain under federal seal. And if and when that seal is removed, we'll find out what the FBI has.
When people start talking about we're open for business, I get so tired of hearing that. Look, at some point in right. time, it comes about picking a player, developing a player, and winning some football games. Sometimes GMs get so caught up in the juice of making deals, meaning mm-hmm. I traded down and got two ones and two twos, and,
right.
this, and you have all these assets you can use, but you're still not winning any games because you're not picking any players that can play for your football team. There's a number of players who the Browns should be totally comfortable with picking at number one overall who will help them win. I would expect and hope that they go ahead and do that.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It is ye old extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Lido's sports leader. What's going on? Happy Friday to you. We call it a free-for-all Friday around here sometimes, depending on what's going on. And I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be one today. We do have a couple of guests coming up, but not until a little bit later. Coming up in about a half an hour, as a matter of fact, is our first one, Sean Corp. DetroitBadBoys.com will be joining us to talk a little bit about the Pistons. And then about 40, somewhere in that neighborhood. Talk a little high school basketball. Sectional basketball gets underway tonight. Actually, some of it is underway elsewhere already this week. And a bunch of matchups in the area this weekend. And we are going to talk with Jim Oswald, high school basketball sectionals preview. Including games right here on the ticket. That'll be at around 4:40 or so, and I'm very much looking forward to that. You know what I'm also looking forward to? Yeah, Yes, I'm playing my desk as if I was a drummer. No, Stan Van Sloppy has not yet been fired. But according to multiple media reports, he's on ye old hot seat. And that is damn well good enough for me to celebrate. It's playoffs or bust. If the Pistons come up short of the Eastern Conference playoffs,
let's all celebrate and have a good time.
I wouldn't be celebrating that. I want to see the Pistons win. I want to see Pistons fans be happy. Pistons fans are many of my listeners.
It's time to come together.
But if they do come up short,
what's your pleasure?
The silver lining of that dark cloud has been revealed. Stan Van Sloppy has to make the playoffs or hit the bricks. Woo-hoo. Oh, I'm loving it. Stan Van Sloppy, otherwise known as Van Gundy to some. I don't know why. I don't know why everybody doesn't just adopt that name. I think it fits him a little better. Both in personality, appearance, and coaching style. I feel like I'm at a wedding. Cushland, grab some 90-year-old grandma and go dance.
God.
Yeah, I know it's really it is a premature celebration, and I'll calm down a little bit for now because it's. It's not done yet, but I felt excited enough when I saw that news today that I figured it was worth a little K-A-G. Cool and gang, indeed. Stan Van Gundy either makes the playoffs or he is out, not just as a club president and in charge of basketball operations, but as coach too, as in all the way out, as in goodbye, as in go take your self elsewhere. I am not a Stan Van fan. I am more of a Jeff Van fan, to be quite honest with you. If I must be a fan of a Gundy, it'll start with Jeff. I'll probably move on to Mike Gundy, football coach at Oklahoma State. Are there any other Gundys I'm missing before we get to Stan Cushland? Can you think of another Gundy? I'm a fan of the villain, the Batman villain, Solomon Grundy. And from the old Batman comic books and Super Friends Saturday morning television show. So Solomon Grundy is not quite Gundy, but I'll take him too before I would take Stan Van Gundy. Any other Gundys you're aware of, Kush?
No, I'm trying to think. I think you covered most of them.
I think I've hit most of them.
Yeah.
Jeff Van Gundy, the brother. I've got Mike Gundy, the coach at Oklahoma State football. And I got Solomon Grundy, which isn't even a Gundy, but I'll take it, damn it. I'll take him as a coach over the business.
Now you're going to make me spend the rest of the 2 hours trying to look up for other names.
Stan Van Gundy is not commenting on rumors, published reports from the New York Times and the Sporting News, and yes, our good friends over at DBB, DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation, all on top of the story. That says Stan Van Gundy is going to be out if he does not make the playoffs. He's going to lose his club president role and potentially his head coaching job, too. Quoting now from DetroitBadBoys.com, and we're going to talk to Sean Corp about this in about a half an hour, a little less now, about 20 minutes. Stan Van Gundy's head coaching job is in jeopardy if he doesn't make the playoffs, but he could lose his prestigious title as president of basketball operations with the Pistons regardless, according to a new report. Mitch Lawrence, Sporting News, writes that Van Gundy is expected to at least lose his role as team president in Detroit, if not also his coaching duties. The Pistons, it would appear, and I didn't know this, already have a highly regarded replacement waiting in the wings, Arn Tellem. Former super agent Arn Tellem was one of the top agents in sports for 25 years before being wooed away into an executive position with the Pistons years ago, and that is apparently who would take over. I did not know Arne Tellem was on his way to that spot, potentially. Tellem was brought on by Tom Gores with a dual mandate to oversee a potential move into downtown Detroit, now completed, of course, with Little Caesars Arena, and also to strengthen governmental and community relations in Detroit. So Tellem has been kind of on the political side, political slash economic slash business side. That's a better way. Business side, more than anything. But now it could very well be taking over the basketball side. Of course, pulls the trigger on this move, according to DetroitBadBoys.com. It would likely mirror what happened to Doc Rivers in Los Angeles with Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta, In both instances, they were effectively demoted out of their presidential roles without anyone using that term. Instead, there was an emphasis of allowing them to focus on coaching, which means they've been removed from their presidential roles, while allowing persons to collect the same fat paycheck that they had when donning both caps. It seems like individuals are preparing for a makeover in the front office, as someone has floated the idea that current Pistons GM Jeff Bauer could have an interest in the Charlotte Hornets GM opening in this upcoming offseason. Bauer's in the final year of his deal with the Pistons. Previously spent 14 years in various capacities with Charlotte. The Hornets announced earlier this year the current GM Rich Cho would not be getting a new contract with the team after this season. So I got to tell you, Jim, this is the most excited I've been about a Pistons story in a while. You know, because I have been talking on this program for the last couple of months, just asking very quietly at first, then a little bit more noisily, a little bit more frequently, asking Piston fans and asking some of our Pistons guests that we talk to from Detroit Bad Boys or Detroit News or anybody else, is anybody else getting a little bit sick and tired of watching the Pistons spin their wheels? They are foundering under Stan Van Sloppy. They're not advancing. They're not getting ahead of things. They're not progressing towards something bigger and better. They are not really in much better shape now than they were when he took over 4 years ago. That's the definition of spinning tires. And if he misses the playoffs this year, especially after pulling the trigger on the trade for Blake Griffin, well, Coach Van Gundy wouldn't necessarily be any safer than President Van Gundy. And Kush, it's about damn time. I think people started talking about it the way I have been for a while now.
Yeah, I mean, we've been speculating upon it and thinking out loud about it, but actual rumors being out there that this could happen should they fail to make the playoffs, that's a new development. I mean, you've heard me say that as much as I want to agree with you, and thinking of if they don't make the playoffs that Stan Van should go, that though I've agreed in that in principle, you've heard me say that my gut's been telling me that because of the trade and his contract status, they'd give him another year. So I'm a little encouraged and surprised by some of these rumored news coming out now. Now, there's still a long way to go.
I already corrected your gut on that one. You know, the fact that it only has one more year is what makes it easy to move on
right
now. You know?
We did. We had that. You know, basically the point is we had that discussion.
They only need a year of his salary rather than, you know, 3 years left or something where it's hard to fire somebody in those.
Right. No doubt about it. And, you know, until I was reading some of this, you know, yesterday and then called Sean to see if he'd be able to come on and talk with us about it today, to me, I was, you know, a little bit surprised because I was under the impression until further notice, and yesterday, last night when I read this being the further notice, that they were going to keep him at least for that one more year because of the trade and, you know, some other things. So I'm a little surprised, but kind of happy to hear that. I mean, when you make a move like they did for a team that's fluttering and not taking the next steps that we've been waiting 2 years more or less for them to take, something that drastic has to be done when you can't make at least minimal advances. And this year, those minimal advances would be, you know, to make the playoffs. Now, they won their last time out, but as of this moment, they're still, as I'm checking it real quick, what are they? They're still 2.5 games out of the eighth spot and still three below 500. That's basically unacceptable at this point.
They've lost 14 of their last 21.
Yep.
You know, when you've lost 14 out of 21, you know, and a lot of which, or a significant number of which have been since the trade, you have not improved. You have not shown the propensity to improve. And the only thing that bothers me about it quite literally is, or seriously, is that the schedule down the stretch isn't one that blows you away. And this is where I find myself between a rock and a hard place. I don't want to root for them to lose, because I don't want, you know, any more than I root for, you know, anybody that I like, you know, to be disappointed and depressed about their team. I didn't root for the Browns to lose because it makes Browns fans who are friends of mine and listeners of mine sad. I don't root for the Pistons to lose because I'm sure it'll make Pistons fans sad. But I don't like him. I don't think he's a good coach. I think he's been overrated since going back to his days in Orlando and Miami, and certainly in these 4 years now in Detroit. I don't like him. I don't think he focuses on basketball enough. He focuses on being something else. And I don't want him to be around. So it's a weird thing here. I'm looking at the schedule the rest of the way. I'm thinking, okay, they could lose that, and that, or they can win that, and it adds up to. Well, so if he makes the playoffs, I'll be happy for the Pistons fans, listeners that I talk to. If he doesn't make the playoffs, then I am just going to throw myself one hell of a celebration party whenever we find out that he has been relieved of his duties. But I'm looking at the schedule, Jim. Orlando tonight, Miami, Cleveland, Toronto. That's a stretch right there. Miami, those are all losable games. Two of them are on the road.
All three of those are playoff teams right now.
That is correct. Talking about Miami, Cleveland, and Toronto.
Yep.
Right. Not Orlando. Which
Not Orlando. They're done.
Chicago, which is trash. Utah, which is their relative trash, are they not?
They've been playing well. They were on that streak recently, but they're still outside looking in the West.
Yeah, I'm trying to stare at two things at the same time, so bear with me. I'm looking both at the standings and the Pistons schedule the rest of the way. Yeah, there's Utah. There they are. They're in the out time. They're 31-30. They're a 500 team. So that's okay. That's a coin flip. It's at home. No, I'm sorry. That's on the road. That's the start of a 5-game trip out west.
Yep.
Correction, seven-game trip, because they go to Utah, Denver. Denver is where?
Denver's just above Utah. So
okay. Then they are at Portland.
Which they're actually number four. They're just ahead of the Spurs now.
That's a tough place to play, yeah. Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough one. Okay, that's good. Sacramento, they're hot garbage, pretty much. Let's see. Then it is Phoenix. Phoenix is hot garbage.
Although that's the second night of a back-to-back, and we know how NBA players are about those.
That is very true. Back-to-back on the road in two different cities. Then Houston, you can pretty much pencil a loss there. Okay, that's a tough trip. That gives me a little bit of hope. The not wanting to see the team lose for the sake of the fans, part of me says that's too bad about that rough road trip. But if you're looking to seal the fate of Stan Van Sloppy, that could very well be a big part of it.
Yeah.
After that, though, again, down the stretch, it's really not a difficult schedule at all. After Houston, they come back home for Chicago. Then they have Los Angeles, the Lakers, and the Lakers are weird, you know, because they're on the come. I think everybody knows they're not a playoff team, obviously, but they're better than they were at the start of the season. Lonzo, how about that? Did you see Isaiah Thomas at 29 last night?
Yeah, I did notice that.
And I found it very interesting, by the way. This is totally off on a tangent as we get away from the Pistons thing. I don't mean to do that, but I'll just point it out. Luke Walton, head coach of the LA Lakers, I thought said something very interesting last night when asked about Lonzo Ball. Lonzo Ball had a really interesting stat line. It was a solid stat line in every area, but not spectacular in any. He had 8 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and 6 steals. And the 6 steals is what's really kind of jumps out
yeah.
at us. And so it was such a, you know, he did something really well in all aspects of the game, but, you know, didn't have 20 points, didn't have 15 assists or
right.
anything like, just was really solid all the way around. Well, meanwhile, Isaiah Thomas had his best game of the season. Yeah. For anybody, he had 29 points and 11 in the fourth quarter, right? Luke Walton, after the game, made a point of saying, I thought Lonzo Ball was the best player on the court tonight. And I thought to myself, okay, is he just pumping up the second overall pick in the draft and highlighting the really solid all-around line? Or is he trying to make a statement? Don't get excited, Isaiah. Don't get excited, fans. You're still not starting. You know, because I'm sure
and you're still
Isaiah
probably
Thomas,
not here in Lakerland after this season.
Exactly. But Isaiah Thomas, because I had a quote from him yesterday, and again, I know I'm totally off on a tangent here, but bear with me as my mind chases this squirrel. Isaiah Thomas had a quote yesterday. He said, you only got to get one team to love you. and he was talking about the fact that, you know, a year ago when he was with the Celtics, he was averaging 29 points a game. He wanted a contract that was going to pay him north of $100 million. And now he's looking for a place to play. He's looking for a place to start. He's off the coming off the bench in L.A. And he's now, you know, in a very precarious situation. And he's trying to downplay the fact that there may not be a whole lot of takers for him. He said, I only need one, just one team to love me. But he needs in these last 20 games to impress somebody, to love him, to want to pay him a big dollar amount. And I'm sure that means he wants to start. And I just think Luke Walton, knowing that, Luke Walton having heard that and being fully aware of the situation, said he made a public statement yesterday saying, you know, I thought Lonzo was the best player on the floor tonight. Just in case IT or any of IT supporters or any Lakers fans even who got maybe the little tease. You know, you get teased a little bit by, oh, my God, look at that. Isaiah erupted for 29. Is he back? Is this the all-star who was fifth in the NBA MVP voting a year ago? Because that was pretty good. And Luke is like, yeah, that was nice, but you're still on the bench. We're not starting you over Lonzo. Lonzo was the best player on the floor. I don't think Lonzo was. I think it was solid, as I described, but that was what Walton, the message Walton was trying to send. So anyway, the Lakers are at 27-34. That's that part of the challenge. And then we go Washington at home. Wizards are a tough team, especially without John Wall. They've been playing very, very well. The Knicks are garbage. The Nets are garbage. The Sixers is a tough challenge. They'll probably be favored, even though that's at home. For the Pistons, the Sixers will probably be favored. Dallas, garbage. Memphis, Memphis is where now? They are, la, la, la. Where the hell is Memphis? Why can't I
think not good.
Oh, they're very dead last. They're better after the Suns. I thought they were around in the Kings, or I mean, in the Lakers. I've heard. They're far worse.
It's been getting worse and worse for Memphis. That's why, kind of why I'm surprised Marc Gasol is still there.
I thought they were in the middle of the pack of the outside the playoffs thing, but no, they're dead bottom. They're actually a half game behind the Suns, for crying out loud. And then wrapping it up, it would be Toronto and Chicago for the Pistons. So, point being, if they're going to make the playoffs, they don't have to be outstanding down the stretch. They have to be, you know, they have to be above 500, certainly, and hope for some other things to help them. And if they don't make the playoffs, according to the report, Stan Van Sloppy is going to be gone. Sean Van Corp, or Sean Van Corp.
I love what you did there.
Is going to be joining us here coming up in about, I don't know, 6-7 minutes after we get about of the Air Sports Center and after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
All right, coincidental for us that we were talking about NBA standings here as we get you a Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. It's now March, and that means we head down the stretch, you look at the top of both the East and the West, and it's a lot closer than a lot of people think. Both Houston and Toronto lead the conferences, West and East respectively, but only by a half game over Golden State and Boston. This is the first time in NBA history that entering the month of March, the leaders of both conferences had a lead of one game or less. Somebody has been in charge of the conference, really, in every other year in NBA history, and now nobody really has much of a cushion. How about that? That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. SportsCenter coming up. More on the Pistons and the Bad Boys and the Slopster right here coming up on ESPN 106.5.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. We roll along at 3:40. Thanks for being with us on this free-for-all Friday afternoon. Time to talk a little bit more about the celebration. By the way, I had so much fun playing Celebration by Kool & the Gang. I just went ahead and followed it up with Get Down on It. Just why the hell not, right? As long as we're bringing Defunk to Detroit Rock City. Well, Motown, celebrating Stan Van Sloppy being on the skids that are being greased to get him the hell out of town. Get down on it, indeed. I tell you what, underrated. Kush, are you a Kool & the Gang fan or what?
No, they're all right.
I mean, they're not all right. They're awesome. They're all time. People just think of Celebration like I played when I was doing
there's more to it than that.
What's that?
There's more to it than
that. There's so much more than that. I don't know why I don't have more Kool & the Gang on my playlist on my phone. I'm going to put that on my phone. I got to get some Kool & the Gang, especially this one. I love Get Down on It. And it's even better when you get to watch them do their stage show because they're phenomenal. absolutely phenomenal, the dance moves they incorporate. All right, I was dancing earlier on because of what I read on DetroitBadBoys.com by Sean Corp that said Stan Van Sloppy could very well be on his way out of Motown. Joining us now to tell us why and what he knows about all this is Sean Corp, DetroitBadBoys.com, part of SB Nation. Hey, Sean, how are you?
Not bad. How are you doing?
I'm good because I've been talking for a long time about Stan Van Sloppy being shown the door because I do not see progress. I do not see a team that is progressing toward being an NBA champion or being a contender to make it to the NBA Finals any more in year four than they were in year one when the Slopster started out. So I've been kind of wondering when Pistons fans are going to say enough is enough. And, well, according to what you reported and multiple reports, including Sporting News and New York Times and others, apparently, Pistons ownership feels the same way. It's playoffs or bust for both president and coach Van Gundy. What do you take from that?
Well, from what I'm seeing, it's more a foregone conclusion that he'll probably lose his president title no matter what happens.
All right. So even if they make the playoffs, he would lose that.
That's the impression that I'm getting. Just, I mean, these arrangements between head coaches and team presidents are not working out. You've already seen Doc Rivers lose his title in the president role. You already saw Mike Budenholzer lose his title in the presidential role because I think it's really just that teams understand that there needs to be checks and balances to kind of protect a head coach from himself and make sure that there's sort of a long-range path from a flexibility and financial standpoint as an organization.
Yeah, I think that's well stated, by the way, because you're right. We've seen other examples of it. Very few organizations can be run by one person. You'd have to really, really have a very special person who has got the respect of everybody, both in the locker room and above him in the front office, in the owner's office, really, to do that. And it's not really working. My question then is, if he is automatically out as president, based on what you're talking about and based on what these multiple reports have been, is it accurate to say that it is playoffs or bust? What if it's play? And when I say that, I mean he stays if he makes the playoffs automatically. What if he makes the playoffs and is a quick first-round ouster? Is there still a chance that they would be pulling the trigger if they don't actually have not only a strong close to the season to make the playoffs, but they got to do something when they get there?
Well, I would say that it's still a very open question if he makes the playoffs whether he would return as a coach. It would mean that Tom Gores has to swallow $8 million in salary to replace the coach, but I don't anticipate he would hire somebody to sort of lead the front office and not allow that person to replace the head coach if they thought that's what was necessary.
That's a good point. Of course, we've seen those kinds of things happen before. Look in Cleveland. They got rid of Griffin and gave the job to Colby Altman, but said, by the way, you're going to be the general manager overseeing Tyronn Lue. It's our decision. It's his decision on that. So it's not unprecedented, but nonetheless, it's a fair question. Jim Cushman, what's your fair question?
Looking at this, and some of the reason I think the rumors are coming out here in a more almost official capacity instead of just guys like us, bantering about it, on radio shows like this one, is parts of this that are kind of interesting. And one of it is that they might have some of the other guys kind of partly in place, at least on the president role side of things. You mentioned it yours, and this was kind of brought up in the Mitch Lawrence Sporting News piece as well. Arn Tellem, who's of course been with the Pistons for so long, and as Bob put it in the first segment, a more business aspect. So it sounds like we have some names possibly being lined up. You also referenced the fact that the front office down in Charlotte, their contracts are up and they're going to be on the market, as it were. Talk to us about some of this. Is this another part of the reason that this is coming out now, that some names may be lined up already to take Stan Van's place, at least in the president role?
Well, I think it's just natural that sort of people are positioning themselves for their possible future with new organizations or just being prepared for a worst-case scenario where they're fired. I think that's why you had Jeff Bauer's name floated as a possible GM in Charlotte. He might realize that his time is coming to a close and he doesn't want to be unemployed, obviously. I think it's fair to say that Arn Tellem is very well-respected within NBA circles. If he was to get a president of basketball operations role, nobody's going to kind of bat an eyelash at that. It would be seen as a very strong hire, and it would allow for at least some consistency within the organization. And I think that it kind of goes hand in hand where they want to project the organization as in a good spot, even if they make a major shakeup, like firing possibly Jeff Bauer as well as Stan Van Gundy.
So it would be more firing Bauer, not Bauer just wanting to take the job down in Charlotte.
Well, actually, I should say that I believe his contract is up after this year, so it wouldn't he'd be fired. He would just not be signed to a new deal.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Yeah. All right. That's fair. Stan Van Gundy is not talking about it. He was asked, according to a couple of other reports, about these stories from Sporting News, New York Times, and DetroitBadBoys.com, and he said he has not. It has not been broached with him, so he is not going to comment on it, which I guess is fair enough. How much do you think this distracts him, though? He won't comment on it, but obviously it doesn't mean he won't think about it. How much do you think this distracts him as he, you know, goes into these final 20 games or so and has to essentially coach for his job? Do you think this has an impact on how they play?
I don't think so, because he's always coaching to make the playoffs, for better or worse. It's not like he's going to let up and not try and win a game. That's not really how he's coached throughout his 4 years. The results just haven't been there. And, you know, he's going to get his money one way or another, so I don't think it's really going to be a pall hanging over his head, but it's sort of all the moves that led up to this. It's those management decisions that he made, you know, making a trade for a Blake Griffin who has, you know, $150 million left on his deal, and now the team fundamentally has no more flexibility for years. And how good are they ever going to be? I mean, that's how Stan Van Gundy got himself in this situation. So the damage is pretty much already been done.
We're talking to Sean Corp, DetroitBadBoys.com, about the Pistons and the rumors, myriad they are, that Stan Van Gundy is going to lose his job as president of basketball ops, but he is also going to lose his job as head coach if he does not make the postseason. Is it fair? Because I've made my point very clear, obviously, as I brought you in, Sean. I'm not a fan of his. I'm not a fan of his personally or his production as a head coach. I thought he was overrated when he was in Miami and Orlando as well, to be quite frank. So, you know, I'm looking at it like, good, let's make a move. But what about you as an objective Pistons analyst working for DetroitBadBoys.com? Is it fair to say that if he doesn't get this done, he shouldn't be back?
I think it's fair to say that, he's not utilized his tools to their full potential. He's turned out to be a very conventional coach. He doesn't like to sort of stray from pretty traditional orthodoxy, and so he's sort of not doing anything creative with this roster. He's not doing anything really creative with Andre Drummond or Blake Griffin. He's kind of hamstrung himself with how he uses his point guards. He leans on veterans way too much, so it's not like he has sort of soared above and beyond. There are things like injuries that have kind of hampered his ability to get the most out of his roster, but he's really not done much to sort of be given a lot of benefit of the doubt, I guess, as far as the results you see on the court.
Is this, in your opinion, just looking at it, is it a playoff roster? You know, what's on? And I mean counting Reggie Jackson. I know he hasn't been playing and he's working on getting back and everything else, but this is the roster that he has put together, and obviously he has to coach. Just looking at the names, and obviously you've got a couple of all-stars in Griffin and Drummond now playing together. That's only been for 12 games, obviously, but Reggie went healthy. And then, you know, you look at guys like Johnson and Ish Smith, and you look at, you know, Bullock and the rookie Kennard. Is that a playoff team anyway, in your opinion?
I mean, I think it certainly could be. I think they're greatly hampered by the fact that they really don't have a point guard. It's hard to have a point guard who doesn't shoot. It's impossible to have a point guard who doesn't shoot and is also forced to share the court with Andre Drummond, Blake Griffin, and Stanley Johnson. It's just never going to work. So if Reggie Jackson was healthy the whole year, perhaps there'd be a lot more wins. But I think his real fundamental problem is just that he gets pieces that aren't fitting very well together, and he's too stubborn to sort of try new things and perhaps bring players off the bench who might be better than some people that would then go to the starting lineup, but the fit makes more sense. So,
is he getting enough out of Blake since the trade? Blake Griffin's numbers are a little down from, you know, the traditional all-star numbers. He's a 20-plus point scorer. He's a near double-double guy and rebounding right now with the Pistons in 33 minutes a game. It's 18.3 and 6.8. Is he being used properly in your mind by Stan?
Well, I think that goes hand-in-hand with not having a point guard because what it means is that they just have to give him the ball and let him create both for himself and for everyone else. I can't really think of very many instances in the 12 games he's been on the team where a player or one of his teammates is creating an easy look for Blake. Instead, it's just everybody kind of float around Blake while he has the ball, and he's either going to choose to pass it or bully himself into the lane and take a hard shot. That's why his efficiency is way, way down since he's come to Detroit. Nobody's creating easy offense. The offense is extremely stagnant. The shooters aren't shooting well, and he can't post up every single time because it's too easy to defend, especially when he's on the court with Andre Drummond.
We're talking to Sean Corp, DetroitBadBoys.com, about the news today, well, the rumors anyway, that Stan Van Gundy is going to lose his job as president of basketball ops, but also may not be the head coach of this team next year if he doesn't make the playoffs this year. Talking about whether or not that's fair, whether or not that he's getting a fair deal in that circumstance. Cush, what do you think?
You know, one thing that I'm thinking of is I'm hearing the last set of questions about, you know, is this even a playoff team, you know, in terms of its personnel and the roster. And obviously bringing Blake Griffin in ties up a lot of money. But whether it's – but it's starting to make me think, guys, whether it's Stan Van or somebody else putting the pieces together slash coaching this team next year, if they don't make the playoffs, you do the Stan Van thing, bring in somebody else. Okay. But how does the front office then actually go about making this team better? They're going to be very high in payroll. I think they're going to be around luxury tax for next season if I'm seeing some of this math right. I could be wrong on that. So they're not going to have a lot of flexibility. So basically, whoever comes in, or if it's Stan Van left over, how exactly personnel-wise are they going to even be able to improve this team?
Well, I think that if you bring someone in, it has to be with a mandate that that person would be given a number of years to do what they should have done a long time ago, which is a more traditional rebuild, tear it down, be bad for a while, and build
tanking.
It back up when you have
tanking.
Flexibility.
Didn't Adam Silver just say no, Sean Corp? No. Anybody who's tanking, we're gonna come down with a hammer of Thor on them.
Well, there's tanking, and then there's playing young players to develop them over time. So I guess that's how they would term it. But I would say that if they brought someone in, it would be with an idea that there's not going to be a long-term successful future with pretty much anybody on the roster, whether it's Blake Griffin, Reggie Jackson, or Andre Drummond. They would all be parts that could be moved to just get assets, to create flexibility, to help ditch some bad contracts and basically build it from the ground up. If they want to bring someone on board with the idea that they're going to make some minor tweaks that is somehow going to take the core of this team and then help it take the next level, that'd be impossible. So at that point, you might as well just bring Stan Van Gundy back.
Very interesting point. You mentioned the $8 million. Is that a factor, you know, that the owner would actually consider here in deciding whether or not he's back? Because, you know, Jim and I have been talking about this for a while. It is the last year of his deal. Usually, if an owner doesn't feel right about it, they'll eat the last year of a contract. They might not want to eat two or three, depending on the circumstances. But he wouldn't keep him around just for the money, would he?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not a private equity billionaire, but you know, he's paying Josh Smith $5 million a year not to play on his team for a few more years still. He's put 30, 40, 50 million, whatever dollars it was, into the Palace of Auburn Hills, even though he pretty much knew he was going to be moving downtown. And he put, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars plus, you know, public financing to the move to Detroit. So it's not like Tom Gores is somebody who's been afraid to make big investments in the team. And I think that he wouldn't, you know, think twice about just firing Van Gundy as head coach if he really thought that was the best move.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to say as well. Sean, just a couple of other quickies outside of the Pistons while we're here. When's the last time you threw a can of soup at somebody?
You know, maybe second, third grade.
It was a bowl.
No soup for you.
Maybe a bread bowl, but I would never use a real bowl.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a strange story. That's just basically a way of asking about, are the Cavaliers still dysfunctional? And I know you're watching Detroit closely, but this is, you know, they're still the Cavaliers and LeBron James, and they made all of those moves at the trade deadline. They looked really, really good before the the All-Star break. Have looked much, much worse since the All-Star break with the new guys. Is there a level of dysfunction there? I mean, you got the soup incident. You got, Jordan Clarkson at the end of that game last night whipping a ball at somebody, some saying in a kind of a fake way to, gain support from your teammates to show how passionate you are. And again, they just don't look like they're all there. What is your take on the Cavaliers as you watch them?
I mean, I'm exactly where I was before all these moves they made. It's not so much a dysfunction issue as it is just a talent issue. Their players that they've spent a lot of money on are just, older and older all the time. They're getting worse and worse, and they could only do so much to radically remake that roster. Now, they did a lot of things, and I think a lot of what they did at the deadline served a lot of those core needs, but they're not going to be a good defensive team. And then when your team is so dependent on LeBron James, your offense isn't always going to be, one of the best in the league if he's having an off night. So there's just going to be high volatility with the Cavs for the rest of the year.
High volatility. Yeah, I think that's safe to say. Is James Harden the MVP of the league?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I know people are starting to talk about Anthony Davis, but James Harden's the leader of the best team in the NBA. He has been all year. He's been the most important player on any roster in the entire league, so there's no reason not to give it to him.
Is there any reason to think, though, maybe that's the wrong way to ask it, what do you think he will be like come playoff time? Because he was second in the MVP race last year, and we saw what happened. He fizzled out of the postseason with really some epically bad performances. And I'm wondering if Chris Paul isn't the difference maker here now. Chris Paul's presence on that team, nobody really understood how it was going to work. I still don't know how it does work, to be honest with you. They're both ball-dominant guys, although Harden is certainly much more of a scorer and much more of a shooter. Chris Paul is, a traditional point guard set-up guy, and he is having a phenomenal season. Some people have said he's a dark horse guy who ought to get a vote or two for MVP just for what he has done for that team. So how does that work? How is it working, and what do you think the Rockets really will be in the postseason given Harden's performance last year?
Well, you're not going to know until you're really in that situation, but I think the Chris Paul move was 100% made because of those playoff struggles that they've had the last few years, because if an opponent has so much time to game plan and they've figured out how to take James Harden out of the game before this year, you could basically solve the Houston offense. Now that you have Chris Paul, then if you double team and give, way too much defensive gravity toward James Harden, they have Chris Paul on the other wing, and he can basically do all of the offensive initiating that James Harden can do. He's still one of the best point guards in the league. So that move was made for the playoffs, and I think they're, a legitimate threat to a Golden State, even though there's no reason to, discount Golden State until it happens.
You've already hit my last question. I was going to ask you, how much of a threat are they to Golden State? If they're in a seven-game series, well, answer it two ways. Right now, the way the Warriors and the Rockets are playing, if they started a seven-game series right now, who wins? And now project out to the end of the postseason and the Western Conference Finals, who would win it then?
I would say that you'd have to favor Golden State in every scenario. They're just too good when they are locked in. They're the best team in the league. But at the same time, because I know when people say that, you kind of discount Houston. So the way I like to put it is just that, if I'm a Houston Rockets player or I'm a Houston Rockets fan, I have zero reason to be intimidated by the Golden State Warriors because I know how good my team is. And if I'm the Golden State Warriors or one of their fans, I have zero reason to be intimidated by the Rockets. These teams should have the confidence that they can beat anybody on any given night and make it a series, whether that shakes out to Golden State Warriors win. If I had to bet, I would say it would be the Golden State Warriors, but I wouldn't exactly be quaking if I was the Houston Rockets.
Very good stuff indeed. It's going to be a phenomenal series. Do you like the idea, by the way, that was floated about reseeding 1 through 16 so the finals could be the top two teams like them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you always want the best teams playing at the end because that's, the most fair. That's why teams play 82 games. You want to at least have a chance at the end.
Yeah, I totally agree. I would love to have that that be the NBA Finals rather than have the Warriors or Rockets, whoever wins that Western Conference Final, roll whoever comes out of the East, and I think that is what's going to happen. Sean Corp, read him, follow him. He's at DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation. Sean, thanks for the story on Stan Van, and thanks for the conversation. We'll catch up with you again down the road.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks so much for doing it. You got it. 4:01 now. Let's get a top of the hour Sports Center. We'll come back. We got a lot more to do. We're going to talk a little high school basketball at about 4:40.
Yeah,
Jim Oswald's going to be talking about the sectionals. He'll be on the mic calling some of the action tonight. Great high school basketball tournament is about to start. So we'll have that for you coming up at 4:40. Next half hour is yours. If you want to dial 866-240-1065, we'll talk about anything you want.
Inbound Redick falling away. Jumper is good for three. Holy mackerel.
Man.
That's as deep in the corner as you can get on the move.
Baseline in for James. Knocked away by Simmons. The steal off the inbound. Ben Simmons. Korver trailing behind him. Flips it. No look to Ilyasova for the lay-in.
Wow.
Embiid has it outside the post left against Dan swiping away at him. Shoots over a double team and hits. Joel Embiid showing all the moves tonight here in Cleveland. Here's Redick pulling up from 20. He buries it with 55 seconds to go. The Sixers executing down the stretch.
Well, that huge right there. That should do it.
The Sixers showing no designs on running out the clock as Saric goes in for a jam. And now we're going to have some words. Jordan Clarkson, Joel Embiid. I think they just tossed Clarkson. LeBron James isn't happy as well.
They're mad about them scoring. You know what? Stop them then.
Jordan Clarkson, after that Saric layup, grabbed the ball and tossed it off of Saric's bat. And that was the ejection of Jordan Clarkson.
I spoke to several players in the locker room who told me that they loved seeing Clarkson do that. We are still in first impression mode right now with the Cavs. And while early in the week, yeah, it feels better to get a win and see Jordan Clarkson make a go-ahead three late in the game to beat the Nets. Yeah, they go away with a loss tonight against the Sixers. Doesn't feel as good, but he still did something to impress his teammates, and that was to show some pride, show some toughness, and show some wherewithal to care about protecting your home court and not, you know, breaking unspoken rules of the games. Not the result the Cavs wanted, of course not, but Jordan Clarkson got that technical. He got kicked out. He also earned some respect from his teammates.
For him to take this podium and proclaim his innocence with this kind of emphasis, that means he did it knowing these three things. First, I'm guilty. No problem, I'm going to look in the eye and tell you, I am innocent. Second, I'm guilty, and there's a good chance they've got me on tape. And by they, I mean the FBI. No problem, look you in the eye, I am innocent. Third, he has to sit on that podium and know this, I'm guilty, they've got me on tape, there's criminal charges swirling, and I am within 30 minutes of being fired. I'm going to put my chips on the table and see if I can out-checkmate them on this one. You want to fire me? Do it with me proclaiming right into your eye, I am innocent. He is innocent, or he is Rafael Palmeiro times 10.
I heard what Sean Miller said. The only thing I can say is I stand by what I reported on Friday night. And based on my reporting this week, I have no reason to believe that anything in that article is inaccurate. As he said in his press conference earlier today, it's an ongoing in the FBI investigation. Telephone conversations that were recorded by FBI wiretaps and the documents and financial records that were seized by the FBI during his two-year investigation remain under federal seal. And if and when that seal is removed, we'll find out what the FBI has.
When people start talking about we're open for business, I get so tired of hearing that. Look, at some point in right. time, it comes about picking a player, developing a player, and winning some football games. Sometimes GMs get so caught up in the juice of making deals, meaning I traded down and got 2 ones and 2 twos, and,
right.
this, and you have all these assets, all these assets you can use, but you're still not winning any games because you're not picking any players that can play for your football team. There's a number of players who the Browns should be totally comfortable with picking at number one overall who will help them win. I would expect and hope that they go ahead and do that.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I'm going to tell you, I love Lewis Riddick, Cush. You like Lewis Riddick?
He's all right.
I like him a lot. I've liked him really, you know, as an analyst for a long time. And, didn't he apply for a GM job?
That sounds so familiar. I got to look it up, but that sounds so darn familiar.
I think he was in the running for a GM job maybe... Was it to work for Elway with the Broncos, maybe? I can't say for sure, but I like him. He's a very intelligent dude, and he's a very, very confident guy. And I love what he said there. I totally agree with him, too. You know, sometimes you get in love with I made this trade and I made that trade. You know what?
Giants. He interviewed Giants. This past December for the Giants GM spot.
Thank you. And you know what? I think he should be a GM someplace. I really do. He's got it together. He's just a very, very intelligent guy, and he gets it. And I love what he said there. You know, he's ripping the Browns for enough collecting picks.
Yep.
Use the picks now. What good are the assets if you don't use them to choose players? And then, you know, players who can play, players who can win.
Lord knows the Browns need those
stock.
Everywhere.
What's that?
And Lord knows the Browns need that everywhere.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you know, you spend all of that time, you know, oh, I don't want to draft guys now. I don't want to draft guys now. I'll draft guys later. We're going to collect picks. And, you know, and now it's time to just do it. You know, bite the bullet and say, I'm going to draft guys that can win, and I'm going to develop guys who can win. So I thought that was great. Now, the other thing I wanted to hit real quick. And by the way, welcome into hour number 2 of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. Thanks again to Sean Corp for talking NBA professional basketball with us. Coming up here in about half an hour, we're going to talk, maybe a little less, we're going to talk non-professional basketball, amateur basketball, otherwise known as high school basketball with Jim Oswald, state sectional tournament starting in Ohio. But I loved... some of that story that you played the clips at the beginning of the montage, Jim, there from the Cavaliers loss last night. But I didn't like what I heard from Dave McMenamin. Now, I don't know who said it on the game broadcast when Jordan Clarkson fired the ball at the...
Sarek,
yeah.
Right at the end. It was like, what, 12 seconds to go? I had actually turned off the game at that point because I got disgusted.
Okay, and that's you know, a lot of people would have done that because you figure the game is over. They're just going to run out the clock. They didn't. They went in for a dunk. You know, it's one of those unwritten rules things, if you will.
Yeah, shot clock was off. They could have just dribbled out and ended the game.
And instead he goes in for an uncontested dunk. And Clarkson throws the ball at him, you know, all bitter and salty because they just got worked by the Sixers at home, by the way.
Not to mention Clarkson himself took an elbow and was sporting the Band-Aid the rest of the game.
Right, right. How about that? Just add that on to the, you know, insult to injury, if you will, or injury to insult anyway. But whoever was in the game broadcast there said, you know what, stop him. Did you, that part of your play-by-play there, Jim, at the very end.
Yeah.
He said, stop him. In other words, he didn't like that. He didn't like that throwing the ball at him. You know, if you didn't want him to dunk on you, defend him. Stop him. This is ridiculous that you're just going to sit there and let him go by you and dunk and then say, I didn't like that you went by and dunked. You should have stayed out there and dribbled out the clock. If you don't like it, stop him. I agreed with that. What I didn't like and didn't agree with, Jim, was Dave McMenamin at the end, not Dave, but what Dave reported on, when he said that there were many guys in that locker room who loved that from Jordan Clarkson. They said, he said, and I'm paraphrasing from what we just heard, you know, they're still in first impression mode, and Clarkson made some friends among his new teammates there when he showed that passion and showed that, you know, we're going to defend our floor type thing. Wait, what? That's passion because you're frustrated that a dude just showed you up after working you all evening? That's not passion. That's not defending our court either. If you wanted to defend your court, you would have defended Ben Simmons. If you wanted to defend your court, you would have defended Joel Embiid. If you wanted to defend your court, you would have played defense while the game was going on, not chucking a ball at a dude at the end. I thought it was Bush League. Thought it was punk. I thought it was, quite frankly, a little bit embarrassing. And they're talking about how they loved it. And you know what I also thought it was, Jim? I thought it was just so phony. It was faux anger. It was faux outrage. It was faux, man, I'm upset that you just did that to me. Because if you wanted to show some fire, man, show it when it's 73-69 and we got a game.
Or how about when it was about, 2 minutes to go and the Cavs had pulled within one in a game the Sixers had led all the way through?
Yeah.
That would have been the time.
Exactly. I thought it was just kind of a, you know, I'm going to look like the tough guy here. I'm going to look like I'm so such a competitive guy that it hurts me and it bothers me when somebody shows me up in my building like that. I just thought it was punk. And I got to tell you, the more I watch that team, and I'm not sitting here, I'm ready to write them off and say they can't win the Eastern Conference because, you know, I've been wrong before, once maybe, I think, I don't know, maybe twice. I'd have to hear the tape to prove that because I don't think I've ever been wrong more than once. I say fully tongue-in-cheek. But, you know, when they made the trades at the trading deadline, the Cavaliers, somebody said, and I don't know if you did, Jim, or if it was just, you know, somebody else who talked to me off the air who said to me, do you think it might have been my son, because I said there's no way. I literally said, you know, the championship run for LeBron going to the finals is over. I said to my son when the before the trade deadline, because they were playing so badly, and it wasn't just like a stretch that they were going to work their way out of. It was a systemic disaster. And I said, it's over, son. And then he saw the trade, and, you know, the four new guys came in, Hood and Hill and Clarkson and Nansen. And they worked Boston and Oklahoma City. And my dad said, what do you think, Dad? They're still not gonna win the East. And I actually said, now I think it's a lock that they'll win the East. Because, you know, Boston and Toronto aren't good enough unless Gordon Hayward came back and became Superman. I don't think Boston and Toronto are enough. I said, yeah, I actually think they're locked now.
I went back to that same kind of position. No one in the East was beating them 4 out of 7
exactly.
After the trades. With the caveat that, unlike the last couple of years, there will not be any sweeps. I fully expect every Cavs series to go 6 games this year.
Yeah, I think they'll be challenged, no doubt about it. But I said it's a lock, and now I'm really backing off of that because I didn't expect them to be this bad coming out of the All-Star break. And I have to say, Jim, I think what I'm finding out is that the pieces that the Cavaliers got in exchange for Thomas and Wade and, well, Wade wasn't really one of these guys, but...
Thomas and Channing Frye, Crowder, Rose, Crowder.
Crowder, yeah, and all the guys that left are four good rotational pieces.
But yeah.
They're not four starters. They're not starting materially in the NBA.
Only one of them's actually even starting on this team right now.
That's right. And they need starters. That's the point. These are guys who are rotational guys who you know, came in to replace guys who were starting guys. And the starting guys here aren't doing their jobs well enough. They need, if they really needed want to upgrade, and I'm not saying this was a bad trade, like I said, because there was addition by subtraction and getting some of the malcontents out and getting some of the personal relationship things, talking about Wade and LeBron now, of course.
Yeah, the more we've read about that since the deadline, it feels so correct that those needed to be made.
No doubt. So I'm not saying they shouldn't have made it, but they didn't get as much in return as maybe it looked like early on that they did. Rodney Hood can score. You know, he's a 16-point-a-game guy. You know, George Hill can play both ends of the floor and defend, which is an upgrade over what they had at the point before that with Isaiah, who can't defend anybody. But, you know, they need starters. They need production. They need guys who are better than just rotation players, and I don't think they have them until Kevin Love comes back again, and then we'll see what things look like then. But, Jim, I'm, you know, as quick as I was to bury them, I was just as quick to resurrect them, and I'm sorry for that use of the language in the Lenten season. I was just as quick to resurrect their chances and say they're going to go ahead and sweep through the East. Well, not sweep through it, but there's nobody who would stop them. And now I'm really thinking I was too quick then, too, because I think they may struggle. And Toronto or Boston, both of whom still are above them, I think both of them, or either one of them, quite honestly, could win a 7-game series against the Cavaliers as they're constructed right now. I really do.
For those two teams, when those rounds come, semis and East Finals, yes, they very much can. That's why, first and foremost, any Cavs series, even their first round, would probably be a back-and-forth 6-game fight as opposed to the blowing through the East that the Cavs have done the last couple of years. In terms of the players that they got, I agree with that. They're nice rotational players. You still need more. I'm partly not ready to write off because of what I've seen for a couple reasons. One, this team still is awful defensively, even though they're a little bit better with some of the personnel now. You mentioned one of them, for example, George Hill versus Isaiah Thomas on defense. There's no question who's better, okay? But they're still overall bad defensively. They're still a team that, therefore, when they're not shooting well, somebody mentioned a stat. I don't consider it much of a wild stat, but I forget if it was during the game or right after. Either way, in the last 24 hours, somebody mentioned that when the Cavs do not hit at least 10 threes in a game, they basically lose. And that sounds about right for a team that doesn't play defense, therefore has to outscore you. Well, if the shots aren't going down, you're not going to do the latter.
Yeah, well, especially if those are the only kinds of shots you rely on.
Right.
You are not a team that can... You know, they can get looks inside and play a half-court post-up game without just making sure that our long-range shooters are dialed in, then you are in trouble. And as we know, yes, it is a three-point shooting league in large part because the Warriors have made it, but it is still the lowest percentage shot.
Yep.
It is still, you know, the old adage, if you live by the three, you die by the three, has not changed. That is reality. You and the Cavaliers do indeed die by it far too often.
Yeah,
go ahead.
And in terms of the post thing you're talking about, that's the other reason I'm not going to go back on what I said after the trades just yet, because that one player who kind of can do that and will change the dynamic of some of this team is Kevin Love, who it's March 2nd, and he won't be back till the end of this month. That is a factor in all of this.
Maybe.
I really do. I think they'll be much better, at least offensively.
That isn't what I was maybeing about. I was maybeing about that he might not be back until the end of the month.
Oh, okay.
The story just literally today, he is taking mid-range jump shots today.
That's good news.
He is ahead of schedule. Optimistic he will return to game action before the team's stated 8-week recovery timeline expires. And again, I'm kind of perusing this for the first time. I just saw the headline that
it almost makes me wonder, looking at the schedule that
Love
the Cavs have.
For early return from fractured Monahan. So they're just saying early return. They're not saying that. Does that mean next week, or does that mean the week after? Is it 2 weeks ahead of schedule, or is it 2 days ahead of schedule?
Here's a good possible date to speculate on. March 19th. That's when they return from their West Coast swing.
Okay.
We were reading the Pistons schedule last week, or last hour that features a West Coast swing. The Cavs got one of those too, to both LAs, Denver, Phoenix, Portland. They finally returned from all that on the 19th. That might be one of the earliest type of days for Kevin Love return, based on the info you're talking about.
If he were to return 2 weeks early, according to the report that I'm reading from, he would still have 13 to 14 games to try to get acclimated with the Cavs' new personnel before the playoffs start. He was confident that he will have enough time to get up to speed.
By the way, you said 13 games there. If he were to come back on March 19th at home against the Bucks when they return from the West Coast trip, that's exactly 13 games left in the year. Just throwing that out there.
Sounds like everybody's on the same page then, if that's what they were able to do. So anyway, the point being that this is a team that, I went from they're dead and buried to they're a lock to go back to the finals to, okay, now I really don't know who or what they are, and I kind of feel like that's how it's going to be until the playoffs actually start. Well, until Kevin Love does come back.
At a minimum, I feel
I don't know what they're really made of.
Yeah, at a minimum, I feel these types of conversations are partly in limbo until Kevin Love gets out there with some of these new guys, and that won't happen until later this month.
Right, exactly correct. So it'll be interesting to see. I really don't know how Kevin Love will be, respond to that or be prepare for that or whatnot, because, what's really interesting about Kevin Love is since he became a Cavalier, as we all know, he went from being the man in Minnesota, the guy that had to do it all, to a part of a three-headed monster, big three or three amigos or whatever they're calling him these days. But he was the third of those options. And it was pretty clear, that it was LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love had to adjust to that role. And it appears, according to virtually all reports and on my own personal observation, that he adjusted to that very, very nicely and accepted the fact that he would be the third option. And now, and in fact, some people, what really is frustrating about this to me, Jim, and this is the reason I'm making the point, is that some, including Stephen A., who's on before we are now, that he's on live on ESPN Radio every day, were saying he's not even a member of the Big Three. It's a Big Two and a Half. He's not as dynamic of a scorer, great of a player, whatever you want to call it, to really, be in the LeBron and Kyrie category. And now, and everybody, but he accepted, and I thought he was just very humble. I thought he was very selfless in the way he handled his role. And now he's gone from Big Two and a Half to you've got to be LeBron's Robin. You've got to be the running mate. Now, if you're looking at what they have now, with JR's not getting it done, Clarkson is a young talent, but no, he's not ready for that role. Nobody on this team is. Kevin Love has got to go back to being a hungry, scrapping, strutting guy who demands the ball, who demands an opportunity to produce, whose numbers have gone down over the last couple of years that he's played with LeBron and Kyrie. They're going to have to climb back up again. He can't just be 18 and 9 or 10. He needs to go back to being 23, 24, and 12 guy that he used to be in Minnesota, because he's being demanded to do more now. Without Kyrie being the real Robin there, he has elevated to that level. And I wonder, Jim, if he's mentally going to be up to that.
Boy, that's such a good point on this, because we were sort of speculating this a little bit in the beginning of the season, you know, before Isaiah came back and flamed out. And that's why Kevin Love was named to the All-Star team for this season, because he was playing All-Star caliber basketball as the secondary option after LeBron on this year's Cavs team. And then, you know, he gets hurt, and they have to revamp
it. If I may, I don't know that it was the same as it's going to be now.
True.
Because,
good point.
Because Wade was here.
Yep.
You know, and Wade was still, well, he's Wade to LeBron. You know, that's Robin to him. That's the best buddy. You know, there's another former MVP in Derrick Rose, and there's a 29-point-a-game scorer in Isaiah Thomas who's coming back, and there was still a very different kind of feel, in my opinion, for Kevin Love. He was still the, I'll be the selfless guy. I'll wait in the corner until you find me. I'll get my three-game going. I'll come down and grab 10 rebounds. I'll work a little bit on the post. But I know you're not counting on me. I am just kind of an afterthought. And even though he made the All-Star team, Jim, he wasn't relied upon in that way. I'm saying that now that those other star players are gone, or star names even. They weren't stars anymore.
True.
But those names are gone. I mean, people are realizing how valuable he is to this team. And Kevin Love, if he's sitting out for these last few weeks and he's got another 3 or 4 weeks, or maybe hopefully only two, I hope he's listening and I hope he's watching and I hope he's realizing that your role here is not just, you know, ancillary shooter and scorer and, you know, kind of fringe all-star guy. Your role has been elevated to stud. You need to be, you know, LeBron's, if KD and Steph are a thing, if Paul and Harden are a duo, and now we're doing duos instead of threes, right?
Right.
You know, he needs to be on that level.
Yeah,
he can't
does.
Be below that level.
And the best way to still start him on that level is something that Ty Lue and the coaching staff still seems to not want to do, but boy, does it scream for it. You got to work the guy inside out.
I agree totally. Absolutely, let him get his touches down low, because he's very, very good down there.
We know he has his defensive deficiencies, but in the post and for some outside shooting, he's been very good throughout his career offensively. They finally start needing to utilize that, but I, for one, am not holding out hope that they'll actually do that.
No, I'm not either. All right, we got a lot of basketball still to talk about, but we're going to go down to the amateur level, the high school level coming up. We're going to talk with Jim Oswald about high school basketball, state tournament sectionals. Are getting underway tonight, and we've got a lot of things to discuss with Jim. So let me get to our bottom of the hour sports center by asking you, do you need a new roof? $1 down. Do you need new siding? $1 down. New windows? $1 down. You can get a new look for your house, your choice, roof, siding, windows, for $1 down. That's the power of 7 years interest-free. What is this year, 2018? You're not going to pay a nickel of interest on your big project until 2025. Think about how far into the future that really is. Don't delay. Call WeatherSeal today. Get the roof, siding, and windows you've always wanted for just $1 down and no interest for 7 years. 877-WINDOWS, that's the number to call for WeatherSeal, 877-WINDOWS. You can also get online at weathersealhomeservices.com. And we're right back after this.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the Extravaganza, final segment here on this Friday edition. Lots of fun stuff we've been going over today. Lots of basketball things. Turning our attention to another form of basketball that's out there. Sectional final day all around, not just here in Northwest Ohio and Toledo, but all around the state of Ohio. Sectional final day for the high school playoffs. Got a great doubleheader coming up for you starting at 6 o'clock tonight. St. Francis against Bowling Green, followed by Start and Whitmer. And bringing on to talk about these matchups and all the rest in all the various divisions that affect teams here in the area, we welcome in one of the members of the broadcast crew that you've heard all season long, Bill Clark, out today. So we're going to the second in command, and he'll be leading the broadcast tonight. Jim Oswald back on the show with us. Good afternoon, Jim. How you doing?
Good, Kush. How's it going?
Hey, it's going pretty good. I love this time of year, and I know you do as well. All great matchups all over the place. Lots of couple of divisions with full districts of whole bunch of teams in the area. So, you know, let's get right to some of these matchups and what we're going to be looking for tonight. And we'll start with the sectional finals that are going on at Central Catholic tonight. The doubleheader will have for you starting at 6 o'clock right here on the ticket. It begins with St. Francis against Bowling Green, and the second game then start at Whitmer. Let's start off by what we're looking at in these matchups, Jim.
Yeah, let's start with the St. Francis PG game, Kush. Talk to the AD from St. Francis after their Central game last week. They're kind of on a mission. They've had two good years in a row now, and they want to get to district, as all these teams do, but they got a special mission. They know who could be at the end of that district, and the good old rival out on Airport Highway, but they're not looking past that. They're playing good basketball right now. I think the close game with St. John's 2 weeks ago really motivated them that, hey, we can play in this tournament and we can play well. And a guy I really like off this team, and of course he's their leading scorer, is Jackie Harris. This guy can go inside, outside. He dishes the ball. He's going to be a lot for Bowling Green to handle. But for Bowling Green, even though they finished sixth in the NLL, they have the league scoring champion in Isaac Elsasser. So they can put the ball up, but PG has had trouble with teams with height this year, and St. Francis definitely has that. So it's going to be a tough one for PG. I look St. Francis to keep their run on here to get to that district.
And with St. Francis, they come into this district number three in the overall. It's kind of, remember, as we know, it's kind of like two districts into that are kind of combined here, even though they'll both play for separate districts. And you referred to St. John's, the number one spot in this particular region. How strong is St. Francis this year? We've had a bunch of their games on, of course, over the course of the season. One of the top teams in that track. And as you mentioned, they want to do a lot more than they've done these last couple of years. How strong are they really?
Potentially they can be real strong. Sometimes they don't take care of the basketball as well as Coach Travis Lewis would like them to, I think. And if they can work it in and out, maintain their composure, and play their own game, the game that they want to play, I think they can be pretty good and give us a team some hassle here in this tournament.
We're talking with Jim Oswald. He'll be on the call for that game, St. Francis Bowling Green, the first game of our doubleheader here tonight on the ticket in district, or sectional, I should say, finals night. The second game tonight will be a start, the City League champs, in a game that you guys had last week. What a thrilling finish, of course, that was. They take on a Whitmer team that beat up on Woodward a couple of nights ago, 51-40. What are we looking at in this one? Despite the City League championship under their belt and the higher seed, I tend to favor Whitmer in this game. Is that how you're seeing it?
Well, this is an old-fashioned Donnybrook from the old neighborhood. You know, two schools right down Tremangel Road from each other. They've had a lot of ball games in all sports against each other over the years. It's a big rivalry. For them to play in a state tournament, it's a big deal. Stark's been kind of a sleeper team nobody's talked about all year. They won 19 games. They pull out the city championship on that last second shot, as you mentioned. And that, so they're good. They're led by Brandon Lewis and Devin Williams and Alex Perry, who all score in double digits. They're a pretty good ball club, Kush. Whitmer, on the other hand, Whitmer is a good and sometimes good ball club. And they have trouble scoring at times, but if they can score with Colbert and Hughes, they're going to be able to run with Stark. Because what I like about Whitmer, the couple times I've seen them play this year and listened to them, they play really solid defense. So their defense can keep Stark scoring low. Whitmer does have a chance to win this one, yes.
We're talking with Jim Oswald. He'll be on the call for that game start of Whitmer. That's the second game of our doubleheader tonight. Sectional final night here on the ticket. St. Francis Bowling Green, the first game. It all gets underway at 6 o'clock. Top part of that bracket is kind of fascinating as it's led by a 2-seed and a 5-seed. Both the Sylvania schools, Southview the 2, Northview the 5. These guys have been fighting it out in the NLL all year long. Northview will get Madison Comprehensive, who beat Perrysburg the other day, while Southview, they get Rogers from that City League title game. They lost, of course, that game to start. They come in as the 11 seed in this particular one. Is this going to be a Sylvania kind of day up there at Stark tonight?
You know, I don't know much about Madison this year. They're okay. They're not real strong, so I expect Northview to play, pull that one out, Kush. But Northview hasn't played well the last couple weeks of the season, especially getting handled by Southview to end the regular season. I think Southview, they're disciplined, they're big, they got guard play, they got Stan Joplin on the bench. I think they should be able to handle Rodgers. So, yes, I do believe it'll be Northeast-Southview next round. But Northeast got to play on their toes tonight, not let Madison sneak one out on them.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, you got, and then Southview against Rodgers in the other one. I do expect Southview to pull that one out, but you can't really sleep on Rodgers, I would imagine, either, even with the 11 spot. Let's go to the other district. These games will be out at Genoa tonight. Bowser against Central Catholic. Bowser getting a bye to this round. Central Catholic beating Fremont Ross 55-44 the other day. And then the other one, the number one seed in this entire particular region, St. John's. They get Ashland. I expect the St. John's to take care of business there. Anything we should note on Bowser v. Central Catholic?
That's going to be an interesting ball game. Central struggled a little bit this year, played a little better at the end of the year. Central's got to get some three-pointers out of Grombacher and Bishop, in my opinion. And the guard out front, Norrells, has got to play a little more under control if they're going to be able to pull this one off. Bowser, you know, comes out of a good city league. They're going to be ready for him under Coach Joe Guerrero. That was kind of a toss-up to me, but I'm going to lean a little bit towards Bowser. And in the St. John's-Ashland game, Cush, St. John's did not play their best ball at the end of the year, which is not typical of a Heintzel team. They can't let Ashland come up and bite them, but we'll see how they get go rolling in the tournament tonight.
Bottom part of this particular bracket features Anthony Wayne against Finley in one game. These games will be at Fostoria tonight. And then the other one is a 7 seed, which is the highest seed left on this part of the bracket. Lima Senior, who relative to their program had a little bit of a down year, they get Springfield. I look at these couple of matchups and try to play it out forward, and I feel that Lima Senior could be a sleeper here.
I agree with you. They could be because they've always got good players and good athletes. It's a matter of where their mindset's at, if they're going to come and play or not. They played a couple strings during the season where they were playing at the top of their ball game, but then they went and lost to Whitmer on Monday, so they're kind of limping into this play, and Springfield's been the same way. They win a game you didn't expect them to win one week, and the next week they lose a game you thought they should win. So that's going to be real interesting, but I'd agree with you. Lima Senior could be a sleeper down there.
We're talking with Jim Oswald. He'll be on the call tonight. A sectional final doubleheader that gets underway here on 106.5 The Ticket at 6 o'clock tonight. Let's go to another division, if we can, Jim, that features, well, an entire roster of Toledo, Northwest Ohio teams. This is Division 3, and it's kind of a fascinating little division. Let's start at the top part. You got Archibald as the number one. They got a Swanton team who beat Liberty Center the other day. The other part is Woodmore against Eastwood. Both of them played in sectional semis a few days ago. Woodmore with a win over Otsego, Eastwood with a win over Evergreen. Let's break down this top part of a Division III bracket here.
Well, I like Eastwood's been solid all year. They played right there. You know, they finished second to Genoa in the conference, but they played solid all year. They got a good defensive ball club. They moved the ball well. I like them to come out there. And Archibald, I haven't seen them play this year, but Archibald has been solid. Just look at their record and who they've beaten. And they're pretty good up and down the floor. So I'd have to go with them in that one.
On the bottom part of this bracket, you got Genoa, who, as you mentioned, they're the 3 seed. They beat Northwood the other day, crushed them, actually, by 40. They're going to get Rossford, who edged out Delta in one game. These games will be at Bowser, by the way. The first set of games in Division III will be at Anthony Wayne tonight. And on the top part, you get a Gibsonburg team who edged out Lake against, quite frankly, one of the darlings of the area here in 2017-2018. Cardinal Stritch winning the TAC, their first ever league title in basketball of any kind. They bring the number 2 seed in this particular district, and this feels like a bracket that Cardinal Stritch, who's had an outstanding year and trying to build on what they did last year in their playoff run, now getting the league title. This part of this Division III bracket, Jim, feels like it's Cardinal Stritch's to lose.
I totally agree with you, and you talk to anybody around town, especially people that have seen Stritch play this year, they said not only are they good, they're semi-young, and they got a lot of depth, and I don't see them. I don't see anybody being able to knock. They might get contested a little bit and run for their money, but I don't see anybody knock them out. I see them in the district final.
Would it probably be Genoa, the team that seed-wise anyway, they would face in that district semi next week? Would that be the team that probably gives them the most trouble?
I would think so out of that bracket, yeah.
talking with Jim Oswald. He's going to be on the microphone tonight for our sectional final doubleheader. Those games, by the way, in Division One that we'll have for you from Central Catholic, St. Francis, Bowling Green up first. Start against Whitmer in the nightcap. The other division that jumps out at me, it isn't a full slate like these Division One and Division Threes, but some interesting schools that had good years in the TAC, and that's in Division Four, the Napoleon District. Out at Wauseon, a couple of interesting matchups. Ottawa Hills will get Stryker, who's always been a good team. I keep noticing their name coming up on these Division Four brackets in recent years when they match up against the Ottawa Hills and Toledo Christians of the world. The bottom part of that is Maumee Valley Country Day, who had an outstanding year just behind in that TAC behind Cardinal Stritch. They got a bye. They'll take on Emmanuel Christian, who edged out North Central. I kind of like Maumee Valley in this one, but I think Stryker is always going to be a tough team. So can Ottawa Hills do anything against Stryker? And what's the project? What do you think is how far Maumee Valley Country Day can go on in this Division Four?
Well, let's start with Ottawa Hills. Ottawa Hills, they play in a little stronger league, I feel, than Stryker. So if they play well, they have a chance. But Stryker, as you mentioned, is pretty good. Maumee Valley, they're really only losses came to Stritch, and they're a pretty good ball club, and they can make a run here. I would give them a kind of a heavy favorite to get out of this district and into regional, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that would not surprise me at all, even though Maumee Valley is the number two spot in this one. The only real team of note in the top part of the bracket in this Division Four is Toledo Christian. They're the number three. So, you know, this part of the reason I've really been fascinated, Jim, and I've talked to you and to Bill about this over the course of the season, been really fascinated with the TAC this year. And Toledo Christian is reason number three. They got the three spot. Out at Bryan, they get a Fayette team tonight. I don't know much about them. Pettitsville is the number one in this entire bracket. What's Toledo Christian's ceiling here in Division Four?
I kind of like them again. I think, as you mentioned, they come out of the TAC. It's a strong league. Now, not taking nothing away from Pettisville, they play a great brand of basketball out there. They like to launch them and run a little bit. But I think Maumee Valley's got a little height advantage on a couple of these other teams, and I think that's going to help them as they run through this tournament. So I'm kind of, they're not the number one seed, but I'm kind of leaning on Maumee Valley to have a good run here.
In a couple of these divisions, last question before I let you go, Jim Oswald, who will be on the microphone tonight in place of Bill Clark for our sectional final doubleheader tonight starting at 6. In these two Division Ones, the Division Three and the Division Four that I just laid out, who are your favorites to win these respective districts when we get there next week?
I like, you got to kind of like, I can't really, until they prove different, I got to like St. John's, even. And then I got to like Southview and the other district there on the other side of that. And what's good about that Division One, throwing in real quick here, Jim, is that the way it's set up with the double district here, we will have a team in the regional final from this area in Division One. So that'll be great.
Absolutely.
I like Cardinal Stritch. I'm going to stretch a little bit, but I'm going with Maumee Valley on those divisions there.
No matter how you're shaking in any of these divisions, it's going to be absolutely fun to watch. One of the best times of the year, particularly here on the local level, as we're getting knee-deep now into the high school basketball tournaments. The district stuff will be next week. It is sectional finals tonight, and we'll have Glenn have the doubleheader for you. Jim Oswald and crew will be on the call. Bill Clark out today. We'll be at Central Catholic starting at 6 o'clock for a Division One doubleheader. St. Francis Bowling Green first, followed by the City League champs start against Whitmer. Have a great call tonight on these two games, Jim. Always enjoy catching up with you. Fun time of the year when you're in these high school playoffs, no doubt about it.
Absolutely, Coach. Have a great one. We'll talk to you later.
That is Jim Oswald. You'll hear him later tonight about 6 o'clock or so here on 106.5 The Ticket, as we got a lot of high school basketball, of course, tonight. No scoreboard show. We're not doing a scoreboard show for these playoffs the way we did in the regular season, even though tonight would be the night for it, as literally no matter what division, what region, what part of the state, every single high school sectional final playing out tonight to go to the districts next week. And we're also going to have, you know, here quick programming update for you. We're going to have a lot of these district games too as well. We got a doubleheader on Talk Radio 100.7 on Tuesday for the girls
in the districts. District semifinal doubleheader next Wednesday on 100.7, then on 106.5 next Thursday, and then next Saturday afternoon slash evening, we'll have a couple of district final games for you, and then you really start separating the proverbial men from the boys at that part when you get past the district. But a fun matchup, fun set of games we have for you tonight. Stick with us all the rest of this month for the best high school basketball matchups here in the area. We look forward to bringing you as many of the playoff games for as many teams as stay alive for as long as they can stay alive here from this area. And that's going to do it for this Friday edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Stick around. Mike Miller, Drive Time, coming at you next. Then at 6 o'clock, as mentioned, the high school sectional final doubleheader from Central Catholic. St. Francis BG up first, start against Whitmer. And because of that, Ohio State Buckeyes taking on Penn State, the nemesis for them this year in the quarterfinals of the Big Ten tournament. That gets underway at 6 o'clock as well. That's over on Talk Radio 100.7. You want to keep the playoff vibe alive as soon as Buckeyes are done at 100.7. Game 1 Bowling Green Hockey in the WCHA first round. They're at home against Ferris Strait. We'll join as soon as the Buckeye coverage is done over on Talk Radio 100.7. Game 2 tomorrow night, and if necessary, Game 3 would be on Sunday. All of those games at home for the Bowling Green Falcons. So whether it's on the basketball court or on the ice, we got a lot of playoff action for you coming up tonight. But stick around. One more hour of fun radio. Mike Miller, Drive Time, coming at you next. We'll sift all through it all this weekend and talk to you again on Monday. See ya.